Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Reaction Shot by Todd Sullivan, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Tapping the control button on his smart glasses, Hyde activated the miniaturized transformer in his backpack as he passed Robin. The coil wrapped around the magnet hummed to life and stripped the influencer's swarm from her. Hyde didn't pause. The client, as he called those he scammed, would immediately know that the hundreds of nads no longer followed the designed configuration around her. He slipped through the tide of commuters in Gangnam Station and turned left into a new wave of people pouring up the escalator. Ahead of him was the parenting facility where his senior technician would be waiting with the hive. He knocked on the only bathroom door that could be locked in Gangnam Station, and his senior technician let him in. Synchronizing their actions, Hyde turned off the transformer and his technician turned on another in the metal box, and the teeny cameras no bigger than gnats swarmed into the hive. "Did we get them all?" Hyde tapped the side of the smart glasses to scroll through the entire electromagnetic spectrum in search of any lingering nads. "Every last one, and the client has realized something's wrong." He pointed to the wrist display around his forearm. "She's placing the call." Over the past month, he'd sent emails spoofing Horde, the medical company that had created the NADS nanotechnology. Once used solely for eliminating tumors in cancer patients by injecting life-saving medicines directly into targeted cells, Horde had re-engineered the nanobots to form teeny recording sensors for wealthy social media users. Tethered to an electromagnet the influencer carried, the NADS could be set to a designated configuration so they swarmed around the user, taking shots and streaming content from every conceivable angle. Hyde had fabricated daily missives similar to what Horde sent their users concerning updates to terms and conditions. All he needed was for a potential client to click on a fake link, which then uploaded a program in the system that popped up in the event of the swarm being stripped away. The more savvy influencers ignored the pop-up and called Horde directly. Others, who panicked over the sudden loss of their live streams, reached out to the first sign of assistance that flashed on their screen. Hyde had predicted Robin would do the latter. Life seemed a daily buffet of novel experiences to her, and she often had a large number of NADs trained on her face to catch reaction shots. She'd gained 4.3 million followers, who had become enamored by her childlike features. Her innocent eyes, cherubic expressions, and shining red hair captivated her audience. Hyde answered her call. "This is Horde. How may I help you?" "My swarm. I've lost connection to my swarm." "I'm sorry to hear that. Please remain calm, and we'll do all we can to assist you. How long have you been disconnected from your swarm?" "It just happened. My subscribers are flooding my feed. They're so worried." "Yes, we understand their concerns. I'm going to help you locate your swarm. Sometimes, if there's a strong electromagnetic field in the vicinity, the swarm will be stripped to that source. The first thing to do is discover their location. You can try and do that yourself."
"I've already tried."
Hints of a whine made her normally upbeat voice tremble.
"They've just disappeared."
"Ah, I understand. There are additional ways that you can find a swarm. I'm going to send you a link, and just click on it. This will give us remote access to your system." Hyde sometimes lost clients at this point. People loathed remote access to their systems. But the technology controlling swarms was complicated, and many of the influencers were preteen, newly rich, and ignorant on the nuanced operation of NADS. Hyde gave the senior technician a thumbs up and sent Robin the link. She clicked on it immediately. Hyde blacked out a portion of her screen and uploaded a program to freeze her out of her system until she paid a ransom fee. It was time to activate in 24 hours, well after this phone call, so that they would not attract suspicion. "I think I've found your swarm," Hyde said. It was stripped by a magnet in the rails. "With just a quick call to station maintenance, I can free them now." Hyde nodded to the technician. They placed the box on the floor, set the time lock, and stepped outside. A minute later, the box sprang open and the NAD swarmed out. "Thank you so much for your help, for being so fantastic. I would like to thank you live, would that be okay?" Hyde, surprised by the request, glanced at his senior technician. "I'm sorry, but we're nowhere near your location. You won't be able to stream us on your feed." "Oh, not on my regular channel." An invitation popped up on the screen of Hyde's smart glasses. "This one is for paying subscribers only. It's very exclusive. Only other influencers have access to it." Hyde stopped short. The digital room had a still shot of him walking through the subway station. "How did you..." he began. Robin laughed. "Look behind you," she said. And through his lenses, he saw the swarm was following them, a cloud of minuscule sensors uncoupling to the nano size they'd been designed for when battling cancer. "This channel is where I punish scammers preying on influencers." The cloud enveloped him. He felt only the slightest tinge in his nose and throat. On the live screen, the screen split into three. In one, he saw the nanobots infiltrating his trachea and recombining to inject carbon nanoparticles that filled his lungs. In the other stream, he saw his senior technician fall to the subway floor, gasping for breath. Hyde was soon to follow as oxygen was squeezed from his lungs. In a final screen, he saw Robin's reaction shot, a cruel predator's smile twisting her childlike features as she watched him suffocate. The Two-Faced Miracle of Justice Father Wynn by Susan Rukeyser, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by the author and Jean-Paul Garnier. The following is an unauthorized account of the events surrounding the death of U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice Jedediah Winthrop in Amarillo, Texas, on June 25th, 2067. It relies heavily on the diaries kept at the time by his law clerk, Missy Ginsburg. Known to his parishioners as Father Wynn, he served a precedent-setting 6 terms as U.S. president, advancing his party's traditional values agenda with the slogan, "Purity Above Pride." He signed into law such landmark Christo-Caucasian conservative legislation as 2031's Traditional Morality Initiative, the Citizens Classification System, and more. Upon leaving office, he was confirmed to the Supreme Court. Warning: listeners are urged to verify the laws in their state pertaining to receipt of media deemed critical of the billionaire class. We, the producers, assume no liability.
The Supreme Court's term was finally over, its orders and opinions downloaded to every citizen's implant. Predictably, riots erupted. They could be heard even deep inside the building, in the office of Chief Justice Jedediah Winthrop. Before the military was dispatched to clear the protesters, Justice Winthrop reportedly said, "Maybe it's time to remind these losers what made America great again." Through the bulletproof glass walls of his office, Winthrop watched his law clerk, Missy What's-Her-Name, pull on a coat to go home. He waved her into his office. She was young, still classified breeder potential, so he had to watch out for her lies. He said, "Shred everything before you leave tonight." "Yes, sir," she said, but he saw her shoulders drop with disappointment. "I'm headed to the hangar. Did you manage to program my Earth-to-Sky bus correctly this time? Remember Christmas recess? Instead of waking up on my island in the Caribbean, I found myself halfway to Portugal, the bus's amphibious functionality disabled. If I hadn't noticed, I would have eventually just dropped into the ocean and drowned." "Again," she said, "I'm sorry for what happened. This trip tonight is double confirmed. Your Earth-to-Sky bus will drive and fly you and your companion directly to the Donald J. Trump Jr. Beer Pong Emporium and Hourly Motel in Amarillo, Texas. The following evening, you will speak at the Traditional Values Party's Alpha Masculinity Conference, featuring an exotic wildlife barbecue."
"I'm the keynote speaker."
"Yes, you are, sir. The following day, you will join your wife aboard the Wildfire Annunciation Shuttle for the Cloisters."
"Good girl."
"Oh, and sir, the agency sent you someone new for tonight's flight. Your usual girl was charged with pregnancy, just confirmed by a court-ordered test. She's on house arrest for the next 9 months."
"She's gonna have it? Sir? What else would she do?"
"Get rid of it, obviously. She's not claiming it's mine, is she?"
"Sir, aiding, abetting, performing, and/or obtaining an abortion for yourself or another person has been a capital offense since you signed the Traditional Morality Initiative over 30 years ago. You recently affirmed it as a Supreme Court justice."
"That's for the worker class."
"Your escort tonight is named Janus, like the Roman god of doorways."
"Janus was male."
"Not just," said Missy.
Once aboard his Earth-to-Sky bus, Justice Winthrop walked back to the bedroom suite. It was dark, lit only by purple. No music, but he detected a low vibration, more of a hum. Janice sat perched on the bed in a short red dress, long legs crossed. Winthrop said,
"Good thing I like tall girls."
"President Winthrop."
"President, that takes me back. Did I have your vote?"
"People like me lost the right to vote years ago. It was the pinnacle achievement of your second term. Don't you remember?"
The truth was he didn't really. Unwrapping a red ball from clear cellophane, Janice said, "Candy, I know how you like your women sweet." It slipped between Janice's lips, and he watched her suck and suck.
"You're bald," he said.
"If it's hair you like, come look at my arms. They have lots, dark and thick, soft as rabbit fur."
Winthrop moved closer to touch Janice's muscular forearm. Janice watched him with big green eyes.
"That does feel nice," Winthrop said, stroking his fingers through the fur. "And you smell good, like summer."
"Well, don't you have a good memory," said Janice. "It's been winter on Earth for years."
Janice pulled him down onto the bed, settled him against a stack of pillows, and unbuttoned his shirt.
"That's quite a necklace," said Janice. "Are those little yellow pearls?"
"Holy relics," said Justice Winthrop. "The teeth of my idol, the late, great Brett Michael Kavanaugh, a martyr for Christo-Caucasian conservative values. I want his teeth on eBay."
Janice pounced, kissing Winthrop hard, shoving into his mouth what was left of the red candy ball. Janice's rough tongue flicked around his mouth until the ball slid down his throat. Immediately, Janice stood up.
"Good Lord, woman, you must be 7 feet.
"I am not a woman," said Janice, "and I have 2 feet.
The bus picked up speed for its shift into flight mode. Justice Winthrop was exhausted. He shrugged out of his shirt and slipped into bed. He fell right to sleep and dreamed he was cradled in Janice's strong, furry arms. He woke disoriented and staggered to the toilet, barely making it in time. He vomited red liquid, not much else, bent over the bowl as best he could, a man his age. When he stood back upright, he was startled by his reflection. Swollen face, sunken eyes. His billionaire's paunch had ballooned
and looked deformed, hard and heavy. When he returned from the bathroom, Janice was back on the bed, this time wearing a silver jumpsuit.
"Lie down," said Janice.
Winthrop walked to the window, pulled back a curtain to look out.
"We should have landed in Texas by now, but that's Kentucky down there. I recognize the Mitch McConnell Memorial Dam."
"That's my fault," said Janice. "I slowed your reality significantly to give you time to process."
"You slowed my what? My stomach is killing me. I need something for the pain."
"We have zero tolerance for drug use by our breeders."
"Excuse me?"
"It is illegal for you to ingest anything potentially harmful to our baby."
"Our what? You're insane. Men can't get pregnant."
"That is not strictly true," said Janice.
"Who put you up to this? Was it my law clerk, that Missy what's-her-name? I knew she was up to something. I have a speech to give tomorrow."
"You'll be there," Janice said. "I coordinated everything with Missy. Missy Ginsburg."
"I have rights, you know."
"Fewer now." Winthrop kicked off the covers. His belly was bigger than ever. He stripped off his pants, boxer shorts, everything.
"I don't care what you see," he wailed. "I'm in agony. Get it out. I want everything back the way it was. I can make my own choices. Get me to a hospital. I want my stomach pumped."
"I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. As you said in your first inaugural address, let only God abort."
Winthrop wasn't listening.
"The pain comes in waves but never stops. It wraps around my body and grips my back like a vice."
Janice made an exasperated sound like a hiss. "The rebels' mall prefer stoic male breeders. We intend to decenter your needs."
"The rebels who?"
"The rebels' mall, MAWL, Misandrist Activity Watch List. You assigned many workers to it over the years." "The first woman I loved was added when she embarrassed a male co-worker. I was added for loving women."
"I don't have time for this."
"You should have thought of that before you raked your fingers through my fur or took my candy in your mouth."
"How dare you?"
"I'm not the one who got knocked up. Don't get hysterical."
"What was in that candy?"
"I think you know." Soon, his belly was so big that Winthrop could only lie on his side, although no position was comfortable. When he drifted off to damp, fitful sleep, he dreamed he was no longer on his Earth-to-Sky bus, reality paused over Mitch McConnell's dam, but in a spaceship far above Earth. He dreamed he was examined by two enormous cats on hind legs wearing surgical scrubs. They stood over him and stared. When he woke again, Janice's face was inches from his.
"Wake up. We just landed in Amarillo."
"I don't feel well and I look like hell," Winthrop said, a few frustrated tears darting down his red cheeks. "I'm not giving that speech."
"You will do as you're told," said Janice. "Who are you to deny the world a miracle?"
By the time they entered the busy lobby of the Donald J. Trump Jr. Beer Pong Emporium and Hourly Motel, Justice Winthrop could barely walk. Janice helped him through the crowd. They drew attention, 7-foot-tall Janice in a silver jumpsuit, and Justice Winthrop shirtless and sweaty, heavily pregnant. They heard whispers.
"Is that? He looks awful."
"That sure ain't his wife."
"Pregnant? At his age?"
The banquet room filled with billionaires. Janice helped Winthrop through the crowd. Everyone was shocked by his condition. He labored up onto the stage, panting and sweating. There was hesitant applause.
"Thanks to my friend Donald Trump Jr. for hosting us today," he said with some difficulty. "He upholds the legacy of his late father, may he rest in peace. Although I doubt he can, considering what those women did to him."
He stopped. His body convulsed and he vomited red liquid all over the lectern. Everyone in the audience saw his monstrous baby bump move up into his throat. "It's time," said Janice. Winthrop gagged and clawed at his neck. His necklace broke and Brett Kavanaugh's teeth scattered across the floor, sticky with beer. Janice stood and faced the audience. "Attention, billionaires. You are witnessing the beginning of your end. We have already taken control of the cloisters, your billionaires only floating biosphere. Your beloved father Wynn is about to deliver a hybrid with DNA both human and alien, as you call it. More specifically, and less offensively, I am Keplerian, originally from planet Kepler 452b. There are many of us here. Our baby, like all hybrids, will have two faces. Facing back is the human face, with a mouth full of teeth. Facing front is a face more like a cat's, with the fangs of my foremothers. Hybrids will tear through anything for freedom." With a sickening rip and a shocking amount of blood, a hole opened in Winthrop's neck. The hybrid's little head popped out, blood smeared across both mouths. She shrieked and leapt free, righting herself midair to land upright on 4 feet. Her fur soaked in blood, she scampered to Janice and leapt into her arms. They escaped without incident. No one cared once the baby was born. Winthrop was dead by the time he dropped to his knees. Rumors persist that he was later grilled and eaten by kitchen staff who refused the elephant and manatee served to guests. Janice and the baby settled into their seats aboard the Wildfire Annunciation shuttle, which would soon depart for the cloisters. Everyone wore silver jumpsuits, human, hybrid, and Keplerian. Many held hybrid babies, just born through the necks of men like Justice Winthrop. Janice sent a text. "Missy, where are you?" The reply was immediate. "Be there soon. Love you." Janice greeted Missy with a kiss and whispered that she looked hot in her silver jumpsuit. The baby sprawled across their laps. They held hands, a human and Keplerian who would be married in another, better time. 25 engines roared beneath them. White smoke billowed and they were off, launched towards the cloisters. Below them, Earth got small.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Reaction Shot by Todd Sullivan, with music by Fog Machine, and The Two-Faced Miracle of Justice Father Wynn by Susan Rukeyser, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree, or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe, and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.